Chapter 53. One wintry evening, early in the year of our Lord 1780, a keen north wind arose as it grew dark. A night came on with black and dismal looks. A bitter storm of sleet, sharp, dense, and icy cold, swept the wet streets, and rattled on the trembling windows. Signboards, shaken past endurance in their creaking frames, fell crashing on the pavement. Old tottering chimneys reeled and staggered in the blast, and many a steeple rocked again that night, as though the earth were troubled. It was not a time for those who could by any means get light and warmth, to brave the fury of the weather. In coffee houses of the better sort, guests crowded round the fire, forgot to be political, and told each other with a secret gladness that the blast grew fiercer every minute. Each humble tavern by the waterside had its group of uncouth figures round the hearth, who talked of vessels foundering at sea, and all hands lost, related many a dismal tale of shipwreck and drowned men, and hoped that some they knew were safe, and shook their heads in doubt. In private dwellings, children clustered near the blaze, listening with timid pleasure to tales of ghosts and goblins, and tall figures clad in white standing by bedsides, and people who had gone to sleep in old churches, and being overlooked had found themselves alone there at the dead hour of the night, until they shuddered at the thought of the dark rooms upstairs, yet loved to hear the wind moan too, and hoped it would continue bravely. From time to time these happy indoor people stopped to listen, or one held up his finger and cried hark! Apostrophe apostrophe and then, above the rumbling in the chimney, and the fast pattering on the glass, was heard a wailing, rushing sound, which shook the walls, as though a giant's hand were on them, then a hoarse roar, as if the sea had risen, then such a whirl, and tumult that the air seemed mad. And then, with a lengthened howl, the waves of wind swept on, and left a moment's interval of rest. Cheerily, though there were none abroad to see it, shone the maypole light that evening. Blessings on the red deep, ruby, glowing red old curtain of the window, blending into one rich stream of brightness, fire and candle, meat, drink, and company, and gleaming like a jovial eye upon the bleak waste out of doors. Within, what carpet like its crunching sand, what music merry as its crackling logs, what perfume like its kitchen's dainty breath, what weather genial as its hearty warmth. Blessings on the old house, how sturdily it stood. How did the vexed wind chafe and roar about its stalwart roof? How did it pant and strive with its wide chimneys, which still poured forth from their hospitable throats, great clouds of smoke, and puffed defiance in its face? How, above all, did it drive, and rattle at the casement, emulous to extinguish that cheerful glow, which would not be put down, and seemed the brighter for the conflict? The profusion to, the rich and lavish bounty, of that goodly tavern. It was not enough that one fire roared and sparkled on its spacious hearth. In the tiles which paved and compassed it, 500 flickering fires burned brightly also. It was not enough that one red curtain shut the wild night out and shed its cheerful influence on the room. In every saucepan lid, and candlestick, and vessel of copper, brass, or tin that hung upon the walls, were countless ruddy hangings, flashing, and gleaming with every motion of the blaze, and offering, let the eye wander where it might, interminable vistas of the same rich color. The old oak wainscoting, the beams, the chairs, the seats, reflected it in a deep, dull glimmer. There were fires and red curtains in the very eyes of the drinkers, in their buttons, in their liquor, in the pipes they smoked. Mr. Willett sat in what had been his accustomed place 5 years before, with his eyes on the eternal boiler, and had sat there since the clock struck 8, giving no other signs of life than breathing with a loud and constant snore though he was wide awake, and from time to time putting his glass to his lips, or knocking the ashes out of his pipe, and filling it anew. It was now 10:30. Mr. Cobb and Long Phil Parks were his companions, as of old, and for 2 mortal hours and a half, none of the company had pronounced one word. whether people, by dint of sitting together in the same place and the same relative positions, and doing exactly the same things for a great many years, acquire a sixth sense, or some unknown power of influencing each other which serves them in its stead, is a question for philosophy to settle. But certain it is that old John Willett, Mr. Parks, and Mr. Cobb were one and all firmly of opinion that they were very jolly companions, rather choice spirits than otherwise, that they looked at each other every now and then as if there were a perpetual interchange of ideas going on among them, that no man considered himself or his neighbor by any means silent, and that each of them nodded occasionally, when he caught the eye of another, as if he would say, "You have expressed yourself extremely well, sir, in relation to that sentiment, and I quite agree with you." Apostrophe, the room was so very warm, the tobacco so very good, and the fire so very soothing, that Mr. Willett by degrees began to doze, but as he had perfectly acquired, by dint of long habit, the art of smoking in his sleep, and as his breathing was pretty much the same, awake or asleep, saving that in the latter case he sometimes experienced a slight difficulty in respiration, such as a carpenter meets with when he is planing, and comes to a knot, neither of his companions was aware of the circumstance, until he met with one of these impediments, and was obliged to try again. "Johnny's dropped off," apostrophe said Mr. Parks in a whisper. "Fast as a top," apostrophe said Mr. Cobb. Neither of them said any more until Mr. Willett came to another knot, one of surpassing obduracy which bade fair to throw him into convulsions, but which he got over at last without waking, by an effort quite superhuman. "He sleeps uncommon hard," apostrophe said Mr. Cobb. Mr. Parks, who was possibly a hard sleeper himself, replied with some disdain, "Not a bit on it," apostrophe, and directed his eyes towards a handbill pasted over the chimney piece, which was decorated at the top with a woodcut representing a youth of tender years running away very fast, with a bundle over his shoulder at the end of a stick, and to carry out the idea a finger post and a milestone beside him. Mr. Cobb likewise turned his eyes in the same direction, and surveyed the placard, as if that were the first time he had ever beheld it. Now, this was a document which Mr. Willett had himself indited on the disappearance of his son Joseph, acquainting the nobility and gentry and the public in general with the circumstances of his having left his home, describing his dress and appearance, and offering a reward of £5 to any person or persons who would pack him up, and return him safely to the Maypole at Chigwell, or lodge him in any of His Majesty's jails until such time as his father should come and claim him. In this advertisement Mr. Willett had obstinately persisted, despite the advice and entreaties of his friends, in describing his son as a young boy, apostrophe, and furthermore as being from 18 inches to a couple of feet shorter than he really was, two circumstances which perhaps accounted, in some degree, for its never having been productive of any other effect than the transmission to Chigwell at various times, and at a vast expense, of some 45 runaways varying from 6 years old to 12. Mr. Cobb and Mr. Parks looked mysteriously at this composition, at each other, and at old John. From the time he had pasted it up with his own hands, Mr. Willett had never by word or sign alluded to the subject, or encouraged anyone else to do so. Nobody had the least notion what his thoughts or opinions were connected with it, whether he remembered it or forgot it, whether he had any idea that such an event had ever taken place. Therefore, even while he slept, no one ventured to refer to it in his presence, and for such sufficient reasons, these his chosen friends were silent now. Mr. Willett had got by this time into such a complication of knots that it was perfectly clear he must wake or die. He chose the former alternative, and opened his eyes. "If he don't come in 5 minutes, apostrophe said John, I shall have supper without him." Apostrophe, the antecedent of this pronoun had been mentioned for the last time at 8 o'clock. Messrs. Parks and Cobb, being used to this style of conversation, replied without difficulty that to be sure Solomon was very late, and they wondered what had happened to detain him. He had flown away, I suppose, apostrophe said Parks. It's enough to carry a man of his figure off his legs, and easy to. Do you hear it? It blows great guns, indeed. There'll be many a crash in the forest tonight, I reckon, and many a broken branch upon the ground tomorrow. Apostrophe, it won't break anything in the maypole, I take it, sir, apostrophe returned old John. Let it try. I give it leave, what's that? Apostrophe, the wind, apostrophe cried Parks. It's howling like a Christian, and has been all night long. Apostrophe, did you ever, sir, apostrophe asked John, after a minute's contemplation, hear the wind say maypole? Apostrophe, why, what man ever did? Apostrophe, said Parks. Nor ahoy, perhaps? Apostrophe, added John. No. Nor that neither. Apostrophe, very good, sir, apostrophe said Mr. Willett, perfectly unmoved. Then if that was the wind just now, and you'll wait a little time without speaking, you'll hear it say both words very plain. Apostrophe, Mr. Willett was right. After listening for a few moments, they could clearly hear, above the roar and tumult out of doors, this shout repeated, and that with a shrillness and energy, which denoted that it came from some person in great distress or terror. They looked at each other, turned pale, and held their breath. No man stirred. It was in this emergency that Mr. Willett displayed something of that strength of mind and plenitude of mental resource, which rendered him the admiration of all his friends and neighbors. After looking at Messrs. Parks and Cobb for some time in silence, he clapped his two hands to his cheeks, and sent forth a roar which made the glasses dance and rafters ring a long-sustained, discordant bellow, that rolled onward with the wind, and startling every echo, made the night 100 times more boisterous, a deep, loud dismal bray, that sounded like a human gong. Then, with every vein in his head and face swollen with the great exertion, and his countenance suffused with a lively purple, he drew a little nearer to the fire, and turning his back upon it, said with dignity, if that's any comfort to anybody, they're welcome to it. If it ain't, I'm sorry for 'em. If either of you two gentlemen likes to go out and see what's the matter, you can. I'm not curious, myself. Apostrophe, while he spoke the cry drew nearer and nearer, footsteps past the window, the latch of the door was raised, it opened, was violently shut again, and Solomon Daisy, with a lighted lantern in his hand, and the rain streaming from his disordered dress, dashed into the room. A more complete picture of terror than the little man presented, it would be difficult to imagine. The perspiration stood in beads upon his face, his knees knocked together, his every limb trembled, the power of articulation was quite gone, and there he stood, panting for breath, gazing on them with such livid ashy looks, that they were infected with his fear, though ignorant of its occasion, and, reflecting his dismayed and horror-stricken visage, stared back again without venturing to question him, until old John Willett, in a fit of temporary insanity, made a dive at his cravat, and, seizing him by that portion of his dress, shook him to and fro until his very teeth appeared to rattle in his head. Tell us what's the matter, sir, apostrophe said John, or I'll kill you. Tell us what's the matter, sir, or in another second I'll have your head under the biler. How dare you look like that? Is anybody a following of you? What do you mean? Say something, or I'll be the death of you, I will. Apostrophe, Mr. Willett, in his frenzy, was so near keeping his word to the very letter, Solomon Daisy's eyes already beginning to roll in an alarming manner, and certain guttural sounds, as of a choking man, to issue from his throat, that the two bystanders, recovering in some degree, plucked him off his victim by main force, and placed the little clerk of Chigwell in a chair. Directing a fearful gaze all round the room, he implored them in a faint voice to give him some drink, and above all to lock the house door and close, and bar the shutters of the room, without a moment's loss of time. The latter request did not tend to reassure his hearers, or to fill them with the most comfortable sensations. They complied with it, however, with the greatest expedition, and having handed him a bumper of brandy and water, nearly boiling hot, waited to hear what he might have to tell them. "Oh, Johnny," said Solomon, shaking him by the hand. "Oh, Parks. Oh, Tommy Cobb. Why did I leave this house tonight? On the 19th of March of all nights in the year, on the 19th of March. They all drew closer to the fire. Parks, who was nearest to the door, started and looked over his shoulder. Mr. Willett, with great indignation, inquired what the devil he meant by that and then said, "God forgive me," and glanced over his own shoulder, and came a little nearer. "When I left here tonight," said Solomon Daisy, "I little thought what day of the month it was. I have never gone alone into the church after dark on this day, for 27 years. I have heard it said that as we keep our birthdays when we are alive, so the ghosts of dead people, who are not easy in their graves, keep the day they died upon. How the wind roars!" Nobody spoke. All eyes were fastened on Solomon. "I might have known," he said, "what night it was, by the foul weather. There's no such night in the whole year round as this is, always. I never sleep quietly in my bed on the 19th of March." "Go on," said Tom Cobb, in a low voice. "Nor I neither." Solomon Daisy raised his glass to his lips, put it down upon the floor with such a trembling hand, that the spoon tinkled in it like a little bell, and continued thus. "Have I ever said, that we are always brought back to this subject in some strange way, when the 19th of this month comes round? Do you suppose it was by accident, I forgot to wind up the church clock? I never forgot it at any other time, though it's such a clumsy thing, that it has to be wound up every day. Why should it escape my memory on this day of all others? I made as much haste down there as I could, when I went from here, but I had to go home first for the keys, and the wind and rain being dead against me all the way, it was pretty well as much as I could do at times to keep my legs. I got there at last, opened the church door, and went in. I had not met a soul all the way, and you may judge whether it was dull or not. Neither of you would bear me company. If you could have known what was to come, you'd have been in the right. The wind was so strong, that it was as much as I could do to shut the church door by putting my whole weight against it, and even as it was, it burst wide open twice, with such strength, that any of you would have sworn, if you had been leaning against it, as I was, that somebody was pushing on the other side. However, I got the key turned, went into the belfry, and wound up the clock which was Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.